Well, I hope that 2025 is going well for you all 5 days into it. I don't know what you've thought about the last little bit. As you go into the new year, it's a very reflective time, a time where we think about what's new, a time when we think about what's been, a time where we think about how to go from what's been to what can be. Maybe you've set resolutions. Maybe you have determined that this year you're going to fill in the blank. And I don't know, those could be good goals. It's good to have goals. It's good to have dreams. It's good to have ambition. It's good to seek after things and try and figure out what's new. And as we think, though, about reorienting our life, as we think about whether it be reading the Bible more, and I hope that you'll follow along, read the Bible together with us as we go through. And today would start Mark chapter 2, and every day this week we'll read Mark chapter 2 and look at it in a little bit different lens. But as we read the Bible together, maybe you want to pray more, maybe you want to exercise more, maybe, you know, but the thing about resolutions is, resolutions are great. How many of you have broken a resolution already? I do like just to give Caleb a little bit of applause. I don't know where he went when he came down, but Caleb on January 2nd told me what he was going to do because he said he didn't want to make it a resolution because then he wouldn't follow through with it. Which is good. He even set himself an alarm and all the things. It's good to not only have a plan in place, but to make sure you have the efforts and everything ready to help you accomplish things. But going back to the idea of how we view things, how we look at things, sometimes we need to reorient how we look. One of the things that I got for Christmas is a camera for the back of my car. If you don't know, I drive a little car, and with the car seats in it, it's kind of hard to look out. I mean, don't get me wrong. I've been driving for 30 years using side view mirrors. It's fine and everything. But there are sometimes, especially with kids, and there's all kind of stuff in the way when you want to see what's behind you really well. And so I got a camera, and I put it in, and as we got it put in, the first time I went to use it, I was looking at the camera, and I turned, and according to the screen, I went the opposite way of which way I should. And so I was like, that's not right. And so I looked at the little manual, and it said, if you have a mirrored view, in other words, the opposite of what it should be, just cut the green wire. I was like, all right, well, we're fixing to cut this green wire because it might help back in the trailer. I don't know. If you reverse what's reversed when you're already acting in reverse back in your trailer, how does that work out? Yeah, that's too much for me. So we're going to cut the green wire so that I can see how it's supposed to be. And there are some of us that need to cut green wire. We need to do maybe just a small change so that our perspective is different. Now, you say, oh no, what kind of new teaching is he going to teach today? What are we going to get into? Well, it's the same teaching that you can already guess what it is. The answer is Jesus. But just because we know the answer is Jesus doesn't mean we put Jesus in the blank as the answer. We're going to look today in Matthew chapter 15. And Matthew chapter 15, kind of the second half of it, if you remember way back several weeks ago, we had looked and Jesus had started getting into it with the Pharisees and the scribes. It was over the issue of cleanliness and, hey, how come they don't wash hands? And Jesus said was talking about, look, it's not what goes into a person, but what comes out of a person that really matters, that sets them apart as holiness. And so Jesus is already redefining what it means to be a follower of God. And so now that almost gets put to the test. A lot of times, you know, whatever we hear is immediately put to the test. Whatever we're studying in Scripture, immediately a chance for us to put it into practice. And so here Jesus has been talking about how, look, it's not the ritualness. It's not the things that you've added on top of the law of Moses that makes a person clean. It's what comes out of the person. Well, so with that lens, we start looking, and Jesus left there. Jesus left Galilee. Jesus left where he was with the Jews, talking to the Jews, and he left there, and he withdrew to the area of Tyre and Sidon. Now, Tyre and Sidon, if you're not familiar, it's north. Maybe you're familiar with some of those names. Tyre was the city that was really wealthy. It had a port and people from all, it was big in the shipping industry. They had commerce going on. In fact, Hiram was king of Tyre. It sent a lot of wood down for David to build his palace and for Solomon the temple, and he's familiar there. But Tyre was also known to be an enemy against the nation of Israel. In Isaiah 23, it says, woe be to Tyre. Woe to Tyre. Tyre was one of the people that was bent against Israel. And then in Amos 1, it says, look, you sent a whole community of exiles. During the time of exile, it seems some people went to Tyre for refuge, and Tyre instead handed them over, and they were unfaithful to Israel. And so there was a sense in which Tyre was always against Israel. So why is Jesus going there? Why is he going into this city, this area? And Tyre was a little bit away. It was filled with a bunch of non-Jewish people. Tyre, if you think about history, sometimes we don't think about history. I know I'm not a big history buff, but during the time, you know, from the Old Testament to the New Testament, there was 400 years of silence. And you're like, well, what happened during those 400 years of silence? Well, this was the time of Alexander the Great. And during this 400 years of silence, in 336 or somewhere around there, this is during the period of silence, Alexander the Great came, and Tyre was an island, but then less than a kilometer or a mile away from them on the mainland, they had a little bit of the city, and Alexander the Great sweeps in, he tears down the city on the mainland, and he starts getting slaves and people to throw it into the sea, and he builds a land bridge to the island of Tyre. And then once the land bridge is built, now silt keeps building up, and now Tyre is a isthmus. It's not an island anymore. Still major shipping place, still very wealthy, but now it looks a little different. And Jesus, as he so often does, sometimes it says he goes up on the mountain to be by himself. If you look in Mark chapter 7's account, Jesus seems to be going into an area. He's, look, everywhere I go, these scribes and these Pharisees, they dog me. Everywhere I go, the masses follow me. And so maybe Jesus was going for a respite to an area where the Jews don't usually go. Maybe he was going, we're not real sure why he goes, but as he goes, a Canaanite woman comes. Now, a Canaanite woman, Canaan was the name of the land before it became the Promised Land. The Promised Land was the land of Canaan. And so Canaanites were those that were indwelling in the land that God had to kick out before the Jews to come in. And so this was a Canaanite. This was not a Jew. This was one of the heathens. This is one of the people group that God was continually saying they should be gone from the land. That was there was great discrepancy between there. And so the Canaanite woman came from that region. And she kept crying out, "Have mercy on me, Lord, Son of David. My daughter is severely tormented by a demon." Now, she came and she kept crying out. Do you know what kept crying out meant? Kept crying out. Anybody got anybody in their house that's 4 years or younger? Can y'all tell me what kept crying out meant? Kept crying out. Like, that's what gets stuck in my mind. It's like, come on. She kept crying out. Like, it wasn't just that she asked one time, "Hey, Jesus, will you help me?" And he immediately responded. No, she followed them around. Lord, help me. 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 Where people would like to say, "Lord, help me." That's what seems what the disciples' response. And so as she kept going around, she said, "Lord." Now, Lord could just be a way to say, "Excuse me, sir. Excuse me, kind sir." But most likely because she kept saying it, she was calling him Lord the way we would call him Lord. Lord, as in the creator God, Lord, the ruler of all things. Because she also said, "Son of David," which was a Jewish way of speaking of the Messiah. You see, somewhere along the way, she had some connections with some Jews because she had heard that the Jews were expecting a Messiah and that the Messiah was going to be a son of David. And somewhere along the way, she had heard news about this guy that is going everywhere and he's casting out demons and he's healing people and all the great things that Jesus had done. And so she's heard about him. And so she comes acknowledging him as who he is and says, "Son of David." Hey, Jewish Messiah. I'm a Canaanite woman, but Jewish Messiah, Son of David. My daughter severely tormented by a demon. Don't know what you, if you've never done much demon studies, and for that matter, what is it that she means by demon? When we think of demons, we think of horror movies. We think of like Stephen King or M. Night Shyamalan or whoever it is. We think of those type people and we think of demons and it's like convulsing and all of this. We're not sure what the demon looked like. Are demons still alive today? Are demons... But think about as Alexander the Great had come and taken over and brought Greek culture and everything with him, and the Romans weren't. A lot of people in those days were willing to attribute demons the supernatural. In fact, if you look at their pantheon of gods, you look at all the gods and all the goddesses, and you start making a list of all the names, basically anything that happened, they would attribute it to a god. If it was good, then it was a good god. If it was bad, it was a bad god. And so the wind had a god, and the sea had a god, the sand had a god, the rocks had a god, like everything had a god. Bringing that idea of this daughter was obviously tormented. Now, was it a demon the way that we think of it? Well, Jesus treated it as if it was a demon. A demon meant an evil controlling force. A lot of times is what they thought of it as, an evil controlling force. And so it probably wasn't Satan. It wasn't Beelzebub. It wasn't Azazel. It wasn't whatever the names of the demons we can think of. But there was something that was oppressing her, that was tormenting her. And so was it a spiritual nature? Very well could have been. In fact, I think the way Jesus responded was. But even we too, if you look in the book of Ephesians, it says, our fight is not against flesh and blood, but against the powers of the air and darkness. We have spiritual battles that go on. Now, I'm not saying a possession in the way in which we are taken over and have no choice in the matter, but we continually have the spiritual forces, the spiritual battle going against us. But this girl, she was severely tormented by this evil controlling force, this demon that was plaguing her. And Jesus, though, didn't say a word to the mom. He just kept on going. Help, 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 help. And he just kept on going. His disciples approached him and urged him and said, look, Jesus, send her away. She's crying out after us. God, just send her away. Now, it doesn't say how he wanted them. Did they want Jesus to send them away? Like, Jesus, just be done with her. Send her away so that she'll quit bothering us and don't help her. Or just do it for her so that she'll quit whining. I have to admit, a lot of times as a parent, I want to give in just to make the whining stop. And so maybe the disciples were like, look, just give her what she wants. Just do it and be done with it already so that she'll stop whining. So that she'll quit crying out after us. Jesus, it seems, whether they meant it or not for him to help her, he replied, I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. You see, he took it to mean, or at least responded back to them in such a way, that he was anticipating possibly helping. But he said, look, I was sent to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And already, as he had sent out the 12, he had sent them out saying, look, go only to the lost sheep of Israel. And so he says this, and she no doubt heard it, because she came and knelt before him, and she said, Lord, there it is again, Lord, Lord, help me. Same thing she's been saying, but she comes and she kneels down before him. And finally, Jesus answers and says, it isn't right to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs. Now, that seems like an insult. And a lot of times we wrestle with it and say, how could Jesus be so insulting to her? Is he testing her faith? Is he just a mean? Is Jesus mean at the end of it? Because until Snoop, it wasn't good to be called a dog by anybody. And I know a lot of people really love your dogs. A lot of you want to let your dog sleep in your bed. A lot of you put your, you know, a lot of you do a whole lot for your dogs. But for them in that day, dogs were not necessarily a good thing. Not that they didn't have pet dogs, and I'm sure some people like dogs, but dogs was an insult. And he says, look, at the bare minimum, Jesus is comparing her to a dog instead of a children. He says, look, it isn't right to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs. It isn't right for me to who have come to the house of Israel to do for you who is a Gentile, who is a Canaanite. But she said, yes, Lord, yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table. Now, we have a dog, and the dog up until about 2.5 years ago was healthy, he was slim, he was sleek, he was, you know, he didn't really even smell, he didn't scratch a whole lot, he was doing pretty good until about 2.5 years ago. But Brother Tim saw him for the first time in a couple of years and said, that dog done got fat. Now, what happened 2.5 years ago? The children started dropping a lot of crumbs. And what they didn't eat, he would try and get up on the table and he would try and eat hot dogs, cheese, you name it. He's trying to eat some stuff. And she says, look, God, look, Lord, yes, Lord, even the dogs eat the crumbs. It is nothing for you. It is nothing for you to do this just that I might have a crumb. I'm not asking to be put in the place of security. I'm not asking to be part of the nation of Israel. I just know that what you have and what you give is so good, even just the smallest little bit, even the crumbs, that I might have it. And Jesus replied to her, woman, your faith is great. Let it be done for you as you want. And from that moment, her daughter was healed. See, this is the second time in the book of Matthew or in Jesus' life that he healed at a distance. The other time was a centurion who was also a Gentile. And oddly enough, it's now the second time that he has endorsed somebody's faith. With a centurion, he said, I have not found faith like that in all of Israel. No, in Israel he has found, even with Peter walking on the water, you of little faith. With the disciples in the boat, you of little faith. With the scribes and Pharisees, you of little faith. Over and over again with the religious, with the insiders, with those that were there, he would say, you of little faith. But yet now, this Canaanite woman, he said, your faith is great. And he did for her what he asked. See, that's where a little shift is coming in. We've already started shifting in that it's not the Jewish religion that is getting things done. It's not the giving of sacrifices. It's not the ritual washing of hands. It's not the day after day external actions that we have. It instead comes from faith. And now this is put to the test because now a Canaanite woman who's never been to the temple, who wouldn't be allowed in parts of the temple, this Canaanite woman who is not concerned with ritual washings and anything else, will something be done for her? And the answer is yes, because it is always Jesus that does the healing. It's always Jesus that is the answer. Always Jesus that is the answer that does what only he can be done. And then going on from there, we see even more evidence. Because moving from there, Jesus passed along the Sea of Galilee. Now, it's not as explicit here, but if you look in Mark chapter 7 also contains a parallel account of this. And Mark makes it very clear that he went by way of Sidon to the Sea of Galilee through the region of Decapolis. Now, all of that is Greek speaking. All of that is not going back to the Jews. It's continuing with the Gentiles all the way through until he crosses back over after the feeding of the 4,000. And in Mark's account, it seems very explicit that he is continuing to say, look, it's not just Jews that Jesus can do this for. He can do it for the Greeks as well. It's not just Jews that Jesus can do this for, but he came to be the Savior of all the world. He's not simply the son of David, the Jewish Messiah. He is the Messiah of all the earth. Yet Matthew seems to be having a little bit different emphasis. He went on from there and he passed the Sea of Galilee. He went up a mountain and sat there. So this is all the same account. And once again, it's with the Gentiles, but Matthew doesn't press that. And large crowds came to him, including the lame, the blind, the crippled, those unable to speak, and many others. And they put them at his feet and he healed them. So the crowd was amazed when they saw those unable to speak, talking, the crippled, the restored, the lame walking, and the blind seeing. And they gave glory to the God of Israel. In Matthew chapter 11, whenever John the Baptist was having his doubts, Jesus said, go and report what you hear and see. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, those with leprosy are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the poor are told the good news. And blessed is the one who isn't offended by me. Go and report to John. Go and give this testimony of what's going on. And you see all of the things in the that are included in Matthew chapter 15, Jesus is doing them yet again. He's still fulfilling everything that was. Jesus didn't get confronted by the Pharisees and then he had to run off and lick his wounds up there in Tyre and Sidon. No, he kept doing what Jesus had always done. And all of those things are included except for the dead being there and the ones with leprosy because they wouldn't have been allowed up on the mountain anyway. And so those weren't included there, but everything else was fulfilled. But yet if you go back even more, one of the things that Matthew always includes is that whenever Jesus does things, he is always fulfilling Scripture. And so if you go back to Isaiah 35 verses 5 and 6, it says, look, this is what happened. When God comes, he will save you, and the eyes of the blind will be opened, the ears of the deaf unstopped, the lame will leap like a deer, and the tongue of the mute will sing for joy. See, he was fulfilling what Isaiah said. He was doing what he had always done. See, Jesus is the only answer, and Jesus is always the answer, and Jesus is going to do what Jesus do. Jesus is the God of redemption. He's the God of saving. He's the deliverer, the one that delivers from demons, the one that delivers from blindness, the one that delivers from that cleanses from leprosy, the one that does what only He can do, and He always does it. But yet, even then, it's not always done in just the same way. Because if we keep looking, Jesus then called His disciples and said, I have compassion on the crowd because they've been staying with me for 3 days and have nothing to eat. I don't want to send them away hungry, otherwise they might collapse on the way. The disciples said to Him, where could we get enough bread in the desolate place to feed such a crowd? How many loaves do you have? Jesus asked them.
5 and 2 fish.
No, that was last time. 7, they said, and a few small fish. After commanding the crowd to sit down on the ground, He took the 7 loaves and the fish and gave thanks, broke them, and gave them to the disciples, and the disciples gave them to the crowds. They all ate and were satisfied. They collected the leftover pieces, 12 baskets. Nope, this time it's 7 large basketfuls. And there were 4,000 men who had eaten. I thought it was 5,000. Now it's only 4. See, it's a different time and a different way, but yet Jesus delivers a miracle as is apt for the situation. And after dismissing the crowds, He got in the boat and then went back to the Jews area, to Israel, and went to the region of Magadan. See, there are some things that are the same and some things that are different. And so Jesus feeds not only the Jews, but also the Gentiles. And so with, like in Mark's account, where it was now the Gentiles, Jesus has now healed the Gentiles, and He spoke to the Gentiles. He's taught the Gentiles. He has healed and cast out demons and done all of that. He's also fed them. And so whereas the lady first asked, hey, look, don't even us dogs deserve the crumbs of the bread? Jesus yet feeds them yet again. And the differences that are there, now it's not 12 baskets. 12 baskets with the Jews, the 12 tribes of Israel, the 12 disciples. Now there are 7 large baskets full, which 7 is the number of completion as all people now have been fed by Him. And so as we look at all of this, we see that Jesus is doing what only He does. He continues to do it because He's always true to His nature. He's always the answer. He's the God for all situations. And we look in that He sees that He does it unique to what is there, unique to the situation at hand, exactly as He needs to do. And so where do we go with all this? As we look at this new year, as we look at how we're orienting ourselves, we look at what we're pursuing, what it is that we've been through, what it is we hope for the new year, and how it is that we're living our lives, we look first and foremost to Jesus and Jesus always. We look to Him always because although we don't look at demons, we don't, maybe you've never been confronted with a demon. We don't think that demons are everywhere. I don't know. I did get into a conversation one time. If demons still exist, the number of people that are alive today are exponentially larger, but yet the number of demons has not increased. So maybe it's just more diluted. I don't really know. Can't really give you an answer for where demons are and how much you come in contact with them other than we know that we are against the forces of this world. But I do know that we have many evil controlling forces in our lives. And maybe this year one of your resolutions is to fight back against some evil controlling forces. Maybe there are bad, maybe you don't call them that, maybe you call it bad habits. Maybe you call it something that you know is a detriment to your life. Maybe you know that you're pursuing the wrong paths, and by wrong paths it might be something as innocuous as, I know I'm not doing what I should do, I know I'm not pursuing the good paths that I should be going down. Regardless of what it is that you bring into this year, whatever struggles you face, whatever hopes you hope to obtain, whatever victories you want to see, or whatever enemies you want to see defeated, whatever you are going through in life, the answer is Jesus. It's not in rituals. It's not in circumstances. It's not in getting your prayers that, you know, after 472 prayers, God's going to say yes. That's not what it is. Even though the woman seemed to doggedly ask over and over again, it's not in the ritual. It's not in the ritual washing the hands. It's not in anything we do. It is always, all of those things point us to Jesus, who is the actual answer, who is the actual victor, who is the actual one that saves, the one that delivers, the one that heals, the one that teaches, the one that does all the things that we need done. And so at the beginning of this year, I hope that you look to Jesus. Look to Jesus for whatever it is you are going through. Look to Jesus, trusting that He is going to be consistent. In the Old Testament days, He was the God of Israel. He revealed Himself to Israel, and He did so that Israel would be a light unto the nations and all the world would be reached. Now He's going to speak in the land of Canaan, in the land of Tyre, and all over the world. He is the God that reaches beyond just that select little group. And so even though you are a sheep that has gone astray, even though you are one of the least of these, even though you might say, I have no right to call Him Lord and Master. The Son of David is somebody else's Messiah. I'm not one of the ones that surely He didn't come for me. Hopefully through the Lord's Supper today, you've seen that, yes, it is you that He came for. God created the world. He loves the world. He loves all and who He has made. And so He is the answer for you. You are not unique in this world in that, oh, that Jesus works for everybody else, but I don't think He can work for me. Well, Jesus is the answer for whatever your life's problem is, because He is the Lord. He is the Creator. He is the ruler. He is the one that is control of it all. And so come to Him. Come to Him in faith. Not come to Him with your pride and your arrogance and your bartering, not a bartering mentality. Come to Him in faith. Knowing that He is, and that He's a rewarder of those who seek Him. Knowing that He is the God of love and compassion. Knowing that He is the God of justice. And knowing that He is the Lord that wants you to live your life according to His ways. And surrender it all to Him. And then, whatever happens, it might look different than what you ever thought it would. Yet Jesus will take what's there, and He will work miracles in your life. He will take what's there and He will transform your rebellious heart. He will take what's there and give you a heart of compassion. He will take what's there and lead you to the healing that you need, to the insight that you need, to the wisdom that you need, to all things. For He is the answer. He is the only source of hope. He is the only way we will make it through 2025. He is the only way in which we can have salvation, the only way for anything, for it all points to Him. And so this morning I ask you, do you know Him? Maybe your change of perspective needs to be changed such that you say, I'm tired of doing it on my own. I want to follow Him. Maybe you need to say, I am a sinner in need of a Savior, and place your faith in Him. Salvation is found in no one else. But maybe you need to say, like this Canaanite woman, Lord, God, I will follow You in whatever I do. And if you do, hang on, it could be a bumpy ride. You see, I don't think you realize exactly what giving your life to Jesus means, the sweeping changes it might mean. My parents gave the kids a couple of little power-wheeled Jeep-type things. And there, I was like, look, we got a big hill in the backyard. We've tried this before. It takes a pretty good little vehicle to get them. And so they're four-wheel drive. I can't remember how many volts they are. But anyway, the four-wheel drive, it kind of gets a little bit on them. Because I don't know if you've ever done this with a four-wheel drive before. But they decided, Kinsley takes off and she's driving and she decides, oh, look at those leaves. Boom, just blows through them. She looks, oh, look at those blocks. Boom, climbs up on it. But the wheels are four-wheel drive, so they keep going, and it keeps driving her, and she flips it because there's more power than she knew what to do with. And let me tell you, that's kind of a funny story, but that Jesus has more power than you know what to do with. And so whenever Jesus says, come unto me, all you who are weary, and I will give you rest, His rest doesn't mean inactivity. His rest doesn't mean you can just kick back in the hammock and enjoy life all day. He says, I will give you rest that is found in me. And that rest that is found in Him is an adventurous life, it's a going life, it is a serving life, it is a doing life, it's a life that is life to the fullest. Because life to the fullest is not sitting around waiting on something to happen. Life to the fullest isn't just sitting around and soaking in the rays and letting life pass on by. Life to the fullest, life in Him, is a life filled loving Him and loving others. Serving Him and serving others. Going where He leads, following wherever He may lead. But it's the only life that is actual life. He says, in me is life. Do you know him? Are you following him as your Lord today? He is the answer, and he will be what he has always been, and he will do for you with love and compassion. But are you going to follow him today? This morning, as we have a time of invitation, I do invite anybody that doesn't know him as Lord and Savior. We can talk more. We can talk more after the service. That's all well and good. Everything else. Maybe this morning you want to start off the year praying at the altar for yourself. Maybe you want to pray for somebody else at the altar. Maybe you need to go and make something right with somebody else today. I don't know. But I know that in 2025, this is the first Sunday, the first opportunity after hearing a sermon, unless you listen to podcasts, all that good stuff, for you to respond when God speaks. As we open our word, we should always be looking to respond. And I invite you to respond however God is leading you to today.